Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2434. That's 2434. Tonight we're supposed to have a special guest, and she's Michelle Bless. She comes on one time a month, and that's on Thursdays. And what she is a pastor. She's a minister, a pastor. She's from Cincinnati, Ohio. She is a survivor of severe child abuse, and she is a chaplain. I'm waiting on her to call in. Sometimes she can't make it. Sometimes she's out on the road. Sometimes she's in prisons. Sometimes she's in shelters. Sometimes she's on the street. So if she doesn't make it in, I can certainly tell you that there's no problem with my running the show. I see that Bill is here also. Hello, Bill. Hello, Bill. Yo, Bill.
I had myself muted. Hello.
Yeah, I had yourself muted. Yeah, I heard you. Well, I'm waiting for Michelle to call in. If she doesn't, okay. It doesn't matter because
no
there's
problem.
Always a lot to speak about child abuse here.
Heck yeah, I'll be the minister tonight. How's that?
Oh, I think I should be the minister. Are you going to be?
No,
you going to be the minister?
The host.
Oh,
sure.
Okay. I have no any problem with either or. But what I do like to read the mission statement, Bill, because there are people still even to this day who ask me about NASCA, and they want
right.
to know what we do. So I will read this. We do have a single purpose at NASCA, and that is to address, okay, issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and other things. Okay, number one, educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. They're still at that level. It's getting better, though. Presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, and we do know that it's worldwide. That we already know. Okay, number two is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, that's just a little bit of what we do here, Bill, because we really do so much more. But I can honestly say that it is now 11 years that I've been here, because I came in June, and now it's July, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of change. Yeah, I've seen a lot of change in NASCA. And I can honestly say, too, I see that people are starting to call in now. This is good. The number, for you out there who don't know, is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. But I have seen a change because people have asked me, have you seen a change since you've, you know, participated, you know, in NASCA, become a part of it? Yes.
Yeah. Well,
there is
a
change.
I think we're constantly growing in not just how many people are involved, but in the sense that we're growing in what it is we do, how we do it, and what we offer. We're growing and growing all the time. It's never been stagnant. So it's kind of, you and I have been here probably the longest of any of the duos anyway. And
right.
you know, it's kind of exciting, right, Carol? It's exciting.
I do like to watch the change. And I can honestly say that 11 years ago when I first came on this show, told my story, never left it, just delights the heck out of you. Yes, it does. But, you know, the point is I have seen tremendous growth where people are willing to speak about child abuse now, okay?
Right.
Even the men are coming forward. We know that even on our own show right here, that more men are coming forward. They're in that sense, coming out of the closet where they're saying, hey, I was abused as a kid, and I do have issues, and I do want to talk about it. And that's something that's so, so, so important. Because people have to understand that men feel the same way that women do, or little girls, and little boys, we feel the same way. You know, just because you're a boy and you get abused doesn't mean that you have to be tougher, rougher, more macho, and all this other stuff, because you deal with the same feelings. It's just that you're taught many times over the years to repress those feelings because you have to be maybe something that you're not. And that's too bad. That's a shame. We do have Darlene from Tennessee, and we do have, I don't know who this other person is here. We have, but let me go down the list here. I want to open up the mics. Let me see who this is. Okay, Darlene. Hello there, Darlene.
Hello.
Welcome
Hello.
To the show. I'm waiting on the show.
I'm at the moment.
Say what? What'd you say?
At the moment, so. I'm in Alabama.
Well, you got
the
so. You got the Alabama accent, and I got the New York accent, but we'll make it through. Yes, we will. Okay.
Yeah,
we have.
I talk with a New York accent too sometimes.
Well, you did. Well, you were in New York for a while. Yeah.
Yes,
you were in New York for a while. Yes, you were. It didn't rub off on you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I went there, but about 6 months. So anyway.
Mhm. Okay, sweetheart, let me see who this is here. I'm waiting on Michelle. I don't know. She may be out on the road somewhere. Oh, this is William. I see who this is. Let me open up his mic. There was someone else. I don't know where they went. I don't know. But anyway, what we have here, Michelle is supposed to be here, and she's not. She could be. She gets involved with a lot of ministry. She is a minister. She's a chaplain. And hello, William from Alabama. Welcome to the show. And
hello.
I heard that slurp. we're waiting for Michelle Bless to show up. If she doesn't, okay, we'll run our own show. We have no problems, you know, speaking about child abuse and also how this pandemic, too, and that's what it is. Maybe it's the plague. I don't know how it's affecting families and certainly just people in general. There's just so much to talk about. And I also have what it's like to grow up in a dysfunctional family, what it actually does to a child. I have a lot of paperwork always because of presentations I've given. So I have something to grab, too, and we can talk about that also. But I want you to know that Bill is here, too. His mic is open. But
hi, guys.
Before we – go ahead.
Hello.
Hello, Darlene. Hello, William. I offered to be Carol's guest. And she can host the show, and I'll be the guest tonight, and I'll be the pastor. I'm not really a pastor,
okay.
But I am a minister in a lot of ways. I'm kind of a minister to the what's going on here at Manascus, so that works.
Right. We'll find something to talk about. Does anyone, William or Darlene, do you have anything that you'd like to talk about tonight?
William's on his way back home. You know, I'm not in Alabama where he's at, but he's on his way home from Burger King or whatever. And so he's probably got it on mute until he gets to a place where he's able to speak because he's driving right now.
Okay. That's why I heard that slurp noise. Okay.
All right.
We have, Tanisha, is that right? That's correct. She's going to be on tomorrow, I think. I will be hosting the show tomorrow also. Let me open up her mic. Tanisha?
Hey, how are
can you?
Can
you hear me?
How are you doing?
Yes. Okay, how are you doing? Yes.
I'm good. How are you?
Yes. Oh, I'm doing just fine. Now that I've moved to the country, I can say I'm doing just fine and dandy. I don't know. It's rubbing off maybe. Who knows? I don't know. Oh, geez. Do you have Does anyone have a topic that they'd like to discuss tonight?
Well, I want to say I look forward to listening to Tanisha's story tomorrow. Yeah, it's good that child abuse is changing to where we can discuss it. It's not as taboo, like keep your mouth shut, don't tell. It's not as taboo, but it's still taboo to a lot of people, you know. But I used to get so mad when I was always, you know, even though I was abused severely or whatever, it always angered me when the people always said, "Well, men can't be raped," or "boys can't be raped," or not like that. And I'm like, "Yeah, right," you know. So I'm like, well, all these people closed-minded. They just do not have a clue, you know.
You know, we were just talking about that, Bill and I, right before you guys started to call in, and more people will call in. I'll get the number out again. It's 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Okay. You can call and be a part of the discussion, or you can just sit and listen. That's okay, too. Or maybe you're sitting listening to your computers. But the point is, what we offer here at NASCA is to give information to you. First of all, you're not crazy if you've been abused, okay? We go through all kinds of feelings of self-doubt and certainly no worthwhile feelings about ourselves because we've been told all our lives we were no good or we certainly weren't going to amount to anything, and that just simply isn't the truth, okay? That's just the way it is. I mean, look where we are today. We're still standing.
Can I tell you what a psychiatrist told me what the definition of crazy really is?
Okay.
He told me.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he told me that crazy is like, I said, am I crazy or whatever? He says, well, crazy really is like if you are going to, with all the abuse that happened to me, right? If I was going all of a sudden, I heard loud banging, I heard people, you know, being hit, slapping and banging going on and everything, and I just act happy-go-lucky and smiling around and not acting a little nervous, jittery, scared or whatever. He said, that will be abnormal. He said, but it, you're acting normal for what you had been through. So that means it's not crazy because abnormal is really when you have a different reaction to something that you never experienced. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I like that. Actually, I like that interpretation because when we do go through all of the things that we have gone through, we're not going to act as what they say as being normal, okay, because we have gone through so much. So many times we're acting out, in a behavioral way, because we have seen too much and we've been hit and so forth. Let's go down to Tanisha because she was trying to say something also. Let's see what she thinks about what is crazy.
I was just saying, I think it's crazy, like, when, you know, people all my life that people have blamed me and said, like, all this was my fault and, like, I've always felt like it was my fault. And now I'm 32 years old and I just, the more I just sit back and thinking, and I think I'm glad that I've, someone told me about this group and everything, and it, I mean, it's been helping me so because I'm coming out the shell, I'm opening up, and I'm not depressed like I was and everything, and I mean, I realized it was not my fault, like, you know, I was a child, and
that's right.
I'm taking back control of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I got a question for you, Tanisha.
Yeah.
I got a question for you, Tanisha. I should leave them for tomorrow night, though, but.
yeah, you should.
But the question is, you know, isn't it ironic how, I don't know how long it's been for you not to accept the blame anymore, but isn't it hard after we accepted the responsibility of the blame for so many years to get out of that, get off of that, you know, because at times we still might fall back occasionally to blaming ourselves, but we have to remember to put the blame in proper perspectives.
Yes, it is.
I go along with that, too. is William there? I don't know.
Can
sorry.
You hear me?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Okay, are you driving or are you home? Where are you?
I'm at Burger King at the moment, but I'm fixing to drive
home. Oh, you're
home.
Still there. Okay, all right. All right, well, we'll give you a little time so you can get home and get settled so that, you can eat your meal right and all that stuff. Bill, what were you going to say? You had started to say something.
Bill? Since this is it's supposed to be a topic show, let's do it like a topic show. And the topic right now is, of course, how different we feel today from how we felt as newcomers. So the newcomer generally is terrified of revealing. Maybe they've had really bad experiences with telling the wrong people, and that would be a block to tell, to keep telling. As soon as that happened to me, I shut up. I told somebody I thought should be trustworthy enough to help me, and he turned out to be, interested in me sexually. I mean, God, for God's sake, So that shut me down for another, 15 years or something, until I finally found a group of people that allowed me to speak in front of them without telling me to go away. I mean, I was really afraid that I would be told to go away. And here, the flip side of that is, as soon as I got into recovery, I was told, keep coming back. You belong here. We want you. We love you even. It works if you work it, but you have to work it, but just keep coming back. And it was the opposite message of the one I was afraid I was going to hear, which was, don't ever come back again, I mean, talk about a fundamental difference in the experience of a child and any young adult to finally finding a group that was accepting. My goodness, it was and that's what we want the newcomer here to know. We all consider ourselves to be very similar. Our stories are different, but our feelings, which is what we're talking about now, and our thinking are the same. We're terrified of all kinds of things, including, I know we hear people who were threatened by their dog being killed if they spoke about it, stuff like that. that it was going to break up the family if they spoke out. And so we took, like Darlene said, a certain amount of responsibility. Well, I've got to go along with this or else the dog's going to get killed or the family's going to break up. But it wasn't true. That was putting a thought in a child's head that terrorized the child into submitting to something that was completely wrong to do to a child, especially when we're talking about sexual assault of children. And that taboo of talking about it persists right up until today. And for a newcomer, we want you to know we understand this. Not the facts of your story, and you will hear stories that are similar to your stories eventually if you keep coming back. But what you'll hear right away is how similar the universal set of feelings and thinkings and actions are, especially as we come out of our childhood and we become young adults and we have the ability to act out, or not, whatever it is. Those are almost universal in various degrees to a new person and to all of us. All of us have been there. We've all been there. So that's what I would say is the first comment on, this. The difference between childhood abuse or the trauma in, young adulthood, let's say, early adulthood, and now.
That's true, Bill. That's very, very true. And, once people listen to the show, we have someone here. It's a 207 telephone number here. I don't know who that is, 997. That's what I'll say. Yeah.
I'll look it up.
Please do. Yeah. What people have to realize is many times I've had people say to me, well, I just listened to the show because I didn't want to come on, as a panelist, or I certainly don't want to come on as a guest yet because, I'm too bashful, I'm too ashamed, or I feel dirty. That's always the word that I use, was I felt dirty, about telling my story. And then many times they would say, well, it's a family issue. How often does sexual abuse happen in the family? I've had it happen twice in two different families to me, okay? It's like two different houses I was in. And then, of course, are the strangers. But, you know, the point is many times people don't want to, you know, air their dirty laundry, as it was called that years ago. We have come a long way since then because we have a right to speak the truth, and the truth is about what happened to us. And, you know, but I was in Sears one night. This is before Sears. I don't even know if it's around anymore, but I was in Sears one night. And I was looking at the jewelry. I'm so bad. But anyway, there was this lady there, and we were talking and yakking and all this other stuff, and all of a sudden she asked me what I did, and I told her I was a part of NASCA, and I told her what that stood for. And she said to me, well, I was abused in my family. And I said, well, what did you do about it? Did you tell anyone? And she said, oh, no, I couldn't. And I said, why couldn't you tell someone? Why couldn't you tell someone to help or to get help or whatever? And to bring forth the awareness of what was going on with you. You deserve better in life, okay? I have a rough way of speaking, but people seem to appreciate that. But the point is, she said, it would break the family up.
Right.
Now, how many?
Right.
Yeah. How many people are out there in that position, Bill? Where, you know, they just, they think to themselves, okay, this happened to me. It's awful. I know it's not right, especially when they get older and they start thinking about it and they realize that it's not right. And it doesn't happen in everybody's family. But if I tell on this individual or individuals, it'll break the family unit up. And then everybody's going to turn on me and say, it's your fault. You broke the family up. Why'd you have to tell? Well, why you're okay. You're not bruised or anything. Well, yes, we are. We're bruised in other ways. Yeah. So I had this conversation. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you were finished with the thought.
Oh, go ahead. Which one? Me or Bill?
Well, I guess Bill was in the middle of the sentence.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
One thing I was thinking. One thing that really that we need to understand too is that, you know, when we come to the people that, you know, in this group, people that understand, they're not going to judge you. They're going to love you because we empathize with everyone that's here, and we don't pass judgment. But we don't put nobody else down, and we don't call them names. We don't demean nobody. You know, their pain might be worse than ours. Whatever, pain is abuse is abuse. And one thing I was thinking, I remember now what else I was going to say. Sorry. Okay, I was going to say how you keeping it secret, if you think of that, it might destroy the family, but you might be saving somebody else who is being sexually abused at the moment, too.
Oh, that is so true, darling. Okay. Because, like, I just want to say in my family, okay, I'm going to bring this out. I'm going to spit it out because at one time I was afraid to do it, and Bill knows it, years ago. When I told on my brother, okay, yeah, I told my mother, okay, and she did nothing. Her remark to that was, it happens in families. Well, yes, it does, people, but it's not supposed to. Okay.
No.
But they said the South was bad. That's a joke. You know,
well, that hurts like hell, you know. Yeah, it hurts. Because your mother's supposed to nurture you. Let's talk about mommy for a second here. Mommies are supposed to nurture kids, okay? They're supposed to be the ones that when you fall down, you cut your knee or whatever, they're the ones that take care and all this other stuff. And when someone comes to you, when your child comes to you and says to you, Mom, this is what's happening, whether it be a family member or not a family member, it doesn't matter because, you see, it's the incident. It's the situation that matters. And when that parent that you trust, you know, you tell that, and it takes a lot of guts to do that too, okay? So you're building yourself up to tell mommy. You're building yourself up to tell mommy. And you get it out, and then you get nothing. That injures a child's spirit. and it just simply injures a child totally. And that child loses faith in that parent. That's what happens.
Uh-huh.
You know, can I just make,
yeah.
I want to go back to the woman that you met in Sears, right? Had never
yeah.
told. And
never.
She was an older woman. So she had been carrying this secret for, let's say, a minimum of 30 years, right? Maybe 35
mm-hmm.
years.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I want to go back to it is I want to keep talking about symptoms, if you want. They're called, we refer to them as symptoms of trauma
mm-hmm.
that we carry as, we're still victims until we find that recovery is possible to do and we start getting, you know, some help. Well, she still was carrying for 35 years
mm-hmm.
a kind of a death in her. That's really what it feels like. It feels like your soul has been injured. You know, you are
mm-hmm.
you may revert to anger as an expression that comes out at different times. You may become a total introvert, where you think the world will never love me. It's not just mommy, because mommy
mm-hmm.
represents the world, you know, and daddy
mm-hmm.
represents the world. Represents the world. And so you walk around completely unable to trust anybody, and including yourself, if you suffer from that kind of shame and sense of responsibility that we know is inappropriate for us because we were innocent children. These are some of the common things that a person out there who's a newcomer is feeling tonight. We want to assure them that you can overcome all of this and beyond your wildest dreams have a life. It takes a while, and it takes definite work, but your life can be so completely different if you're 50 years old, or if you're 40, or if you're 30, however long
mm-hmm.
you've carried it. From this point forward, it can change, and we will help. That's what we're all about here. All of us have been to that sort of that pit of desperation, Carol, that
mm-hmm.
you have
yeah.
just before
yeah.
you get into recovery, and we don't feel that anymore. And what a relief. What a burden lifted.
Oh, God, you're so right about that. Mm-hmm. I wonder if William's home yet. William, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you home or are you
yeah,
still online?
I'm home now.
Huh? Oh, okay.
I'm home
how
now.
You've been listening to what we've been saying here. How do you feel about, you know, what we're talking about? What do you have to say about that?
Well, there's some issues about families and trust and families and things like that, but there's also the issue about the abuse of the individual, and you run into some conflict in some of what you're talking about there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's
well,
one of the problems
let
with
me say
the
something.
Issue with that.
What do you think is the issue? Let's go ahead and continue what you're saying there.
Some
what
of
you
it has
because...
to do with the status of the families and things and the stuff going
mm-hmm.
on, which, you know, it depends on the society. They keep a lot of things hidden and things in the family sometimes, especially in a high society family or a rich or powerful family. Because
mm-hmm.
It can affect your business and other things in the public and the operation of the public eye. So they're very careful in some ways about some of that stuff.
Well,
let me say something about that, though, William.
It doesn't have to happen in the family. It can happen anywhere. And I'm saying that the general expression of how it feels, the experience of how it feels, after you're out of your childhood but you haven't dealt with it yet, that's what I'm talking about. Not how it happened, but how we feel about it. You know, that's karma. I'm sorry, Carol. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, let me say something about that. I understand what he's saying, where he's coming from. I came from a very wealthy family. Yeah. My family was wealthy, very highly wealthy people, and knew really high-up people. My grandfather was mayor of Westwood, New Jersey, and we knew a lot of political people. We knew all kinds of different people. The point is the actions happened, okay? You see, what we have to learn as a society, if we don't address the core issue of our children, our children, like you always say, Bill, and I'm going to get down to you, Kathy. I see that you're on now. I just want you to know your mic is open. So
hi.
I'm going to get to you in a second. Yeah, hi, honey. I just want to say that we have so many kids that have gone astray. Now, our society has got to change, okay? If we don't listen to our children, if we don't nurture our children, if we don't tell our children that they matter, if we don't tell our children that I love you, if you don't hug your children and let them feel that love coming from the parent and parents, then our children are going to not feel like they're important at all. And the behavior of the child is going to come out in society one way or another, okay? And if your child
right.
comes to you and says to you that so-and-so is sexually abusing me, even if they're a family member, okay, then you have to address that issue. And I don't care if you're rich, poor, in between, if there is an in-between. I don't care what you are. Because, you see, it's the issue. It's the core issue. It's that child. And that child is more important, especially at that moment, than any of the wealth or any of the things that have been mentioned here. It's that child's life.
Yeah, but I want to make the point really briefly before we go to Kathy
mm-hmm.
that it doesn't have to be your
yeah.
family. It wasn't in my case, my family, that I was abused in. But I still had fear of my family's finding out.
Mm-hmm.
They were not the perpetrators because I didn't want them hurt. And, you know, in my case, it was a camp counselor. You know, it was a person who they had sent me to along with, you know, my sister a year later. They sent us to
mm-hmm.
summer camp so we'd have a nice time at summer. Well, it turned out to be
mm-hmm.
anything but. And then subsequently, I was abused by other men, all men in my case, and they were mostly Catholic priests and brothers. That also
mm-hmm.
was a sense of shame for my family. They did eventually find out when I was 27. I told them long after the damage was done. But I'm just saying, my family was solidly middle class. It was nothing. It was not upper and it was not lower. It was solidly middle class. But it doesn't have anything to do with the hierarchy. Or, you know, like we say, it's not your ethnic background, your social status, how much money is
yeah.
in your parents' bank, how educated they were. None of that matters. We don't care if you're black, brown, green, yellow, or orange as a person, what religious background you had. When a child is damaged, is what I'm saying. Although our stories are different, how we feel about them, how we react to them, and how we... And our thinking process is damaged until we hear the message that we're trying to transmit tonight to any newcomer that's listening, that there's a tremendous
mm-hmm.
amount of hope for you and that we're here to help with that hope, help you find your path, what Carol correctly calls your healing journey. So that's the point
yes.
I was trying to make. It's not just big families by any means.
No, and it is a healing journey. Let's go to Kathy. We haven't given her a chance to talk. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. You guys got a minute for me now? I've been listening for a while. I have a few things to say. And
go ahead.
One of them is I never felt that it was my fault, ever. Ever felt that it was my fault that he did what he did, you know. But I was 17. And so maybe that's a little different. When I was a kid and he abused me, same brother, I'm sorry, abused my brother, I didn't think of it as abuse. You know, his little stupid tinker toy games, and I really didn't think of it as, you know, sex at all. I was eight, nine. But I did the eggshell walk, I call it, for the family, because it was difficult for them. But as far as telling, I wasn't afraid ever to tell anybody. I just don't think they really cared. You know, what could they do? You tell the parents or something, what can they do? You know, you say somebody should do something. It should be addressed. How can it be addressed? I mean, are they going to put their kid in jail? I mean, you know, and then it's just the needs of the child and or the abused. And it's very difficult, as we all know, those who haven't been abused, to understand what the needs of the abused are. Hell, we're just figuring out what the heck happened to us for a long time. But I don't know about the rock bottom. I know my sister went through a great deal of trouble. We had an emotionally abusive household also. And she fell deeply into drugs and alcohol and whatnot and men and all kinds of things. But I stayed away from those types of vices. I was truly, I would say, sexually totally clueless. I didn't want sex right after I was 17. I didn't care about it, so I had it, but it meant nothing. So that was kind of a numbness for a lot of years. I didn't know what I was missing, basically. I didn't know what everybody thought was this big deal was about it. And I did take control. I wasn't around the family at all. I didn't want to be near them. But as far as addressing it, I mean, I had to go through what I went through. And I didn't feel alone as a kid, even though they were very neglectful parents, very self-absorbed. But I think that I was blessed to see that young enough that I knew that they didn't have a clue and that I had to look elsewhere. So I was truly never, ever had to go find God, you know, because really young, I knew that was my salvation for my whole life, and I didn't have to worry if the next moment never happens because I'm ready. You know, so I think that has been a true, true measure of strength, and I know that a lot of people say that they finally, you know, come to the realization of that, and that they don't have to depend on have expectations that this person's approval is going to be available or that person's approval is going to be available. And I also know that even though, oh, yeah, sure, I tell the details, and as you well know, we've heard so many, and for those that have not had any type of abuse, it's just, oh, yeah, you know, they're just can't, you know, it's just too much for their minds to wrap around. But I also knew that even though, you know, I'm not minimizing, in other words, what I had or anyone else, but everyone has had things that affect them and that, you know, in childhood that they have to come to terms with. We all do, and truly they're all a blessing. But I think for myself, in my life, in my hindsight, because I'm 67 now and I can look back for a little bit, the tougher, I think, and my girlfriend now, she's losing a kidney that she had transplanted like 35 years ago. She's well past her time. We hope she doesn't lose it, but it's very tough. She's, I've known her dear friend. And when kidney disease, and she was born with it. Twin died in utero. A very difficult life. And when you have things that are really strong, you have to face the things in your life, or you're going to be just smothered in who knows what. And I think in that regard, I find some of the most difficult things that I've gone through as some of the most blessing things. And I think
sure.
I wrote some poetry,
yeah.
and I'm writing new poetry, and I'm this is my theme of my new poetry, and to let you know how wonderful things are and how great life is. And I had a beauty and the joy and the blessing of being able to see a hailstorm from the top in the mountains above the clouds, and they spread. And there I saw like little pieces of, you know, boom, little light things, only they were hail, you know, that going down on both sides of the valley and getting into the bigger things and popping up until they're on the bottom. And I just watched it. And thank God, you know, for everything. And,
okay, well,
you know.
I see where. Let me say something to you, Kathy, okay?
Okay.
Did I say something wrong again?
Because every time
I call in, I get
old, man,
you're doing it wrong.
Jump
to the phone and I'll bite
you.
You're
doing it wrong.
Hold on a second.
I'm going to agree with her, too. Some of this, I'm going to agree with her. I never felt responsible. Never.
Me neither.
I never felt shame until I heard that word being used. I never felt shame. But I did feel like I had to keep the secret. That's how I expressed it.
I did keep the secret, but I didn't think that I was obligated to, but I felt as though I wanted to keep them from having to face it because they couldn't wrap their little minds around it. And I did.
I agree.
But I chose to do it, and I even confronted the rapist. you know, because I figured, you know, you got to forgive them. You got to go with the confrontation. But the idea, and it's been mentioned before, the parents, the family, the loving people around you that have to address it.
Mm.
I mean, it happened to me. It happened to you. How does someone else address it? I love the educating of the public. I'm, you know, I have lots of irons
well,
in the
let
fire.
Let me
so
say something right there before you go on any further, okay? Here's the problem, okay? If we don't address the individual, I don't care if it's your son or if it's your uncle or whomever it is in the family, it doesn't matter who it is, that person continues to go on and abuse. See, that's what we're trying so hard.
Okay,
at
when you say address it, you mean confront the and call
yeah.
the call the abuser out
yeah.
for what he did, and point
yeah.
your finger at him and say, "You son of a," or whatever you say. You say, "Hey, you did this terrible thing," you know.
Well, that's
okay.
With my uncle when I lived in that first house of horror, he got beaten up really bad, not by anyone in my family because they just hushed it. But he continued on his way. You see, broken bones heal, okay? And it doesn't stop the action of the individual. If we don't put our foot down and say, enough is enough, this is not acceptable, and you're going to jail, okay? If we don't say that, then that person is out on the street. Now, what that individual did do, in my case, the uncle, he just simply went down to Florida, and he continued on in his way and kept, you know, abusing children.
Well, I'm glad
you
clarified that on address, because that's what I wanted to know. Because certainly we have to address our growth and journey and what is, you know, the power we're being affected by it and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But I like being able to put it outside of while the burden is heavy enough that we carry as it is, and not that we're going to have to not address what's happening to us. That has to be addressed. No getting around that.
I don't want to tell a newcomer that they have to do this and they must do that. They don't have to do a thing. Many
mm-hmm.
of us
mm-hmm.
have chosen to address our abuser.
Well, that's why I was asking
when you use the phrase that must be addressed.
I wanted to know what it meant. That's exactly what I wanted clarified. Because can you say it must be addressed?
The point is,
I agree.
The point is,
you must address the abuser.
It does not have to be. You do not have to address the abuser or the abuse. You have to deal with what's inside of you.
Well, then you guys are having a difference, or am I not understanding this? Because I believe Carol said,
I'm trying to give a message
right?
to newcomers
mm-hmm.
that we don't want to put a burden on a newcomer
see,
who's listening tonight to think they must do anything, especially
mm-hmm.
you know, if they're already afraid and they've never addressed this to a perpetrator. We don't want to say you have to do. You don't have to. You never have to. Okay, and I'm trying to keep this discussion for the newcomer that's listening to
yeah,
my.
Yeah, I understand. Every time I come on, I'm told that I'm doing something that's not right because there should be somebody listening. This is
nobody
what happens. So
nobody
I don't want to have that happen again. Okay?
Look, I'm host tonight. Now let me say something.
Thank you.
Here. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Let me say something. Now, this is the way I look at it, and there's many of eyes that feel the same way, okay? I'm just going to put it that way. We're trying to bring down the number, you know, of child abuse cases.
Yeah.
We're never going to stop it, never, okay?
Gotcha.
And what I suggest to people, okay, is that, yes, you're scared to point your finger at someone. You bet you are. I thought I was going to be killed, and he did try to run me down, okay, after I told on him with his vehicle. But I'm glad to this day even that I did tell on him, all right? If we don't address these issues, then these people, okay, I'm trying to encourage people. It's a good thing to tell because we're doing a good thing because if we do tell and the proper steps are taken, then that person is off of the street, hopefully, right? They go to jail. First-time offenders go to jail,
And if they
and
are
the
first-time offenders.
And the taboo for speaking is also, as you were mentioning, you've heard that difference since the 11 years you've been with the show and, you know,
mm-hmm.
hosting. The taboo is lesser and lesser. And that's another reason, in my view, that is helpful for speaking because it does lessen the taboo. And those people that have an experience,
I mean, it's so important.
Wrap it around their heads around it. You know.
Kathy, it's so important. It's so important to let people know that they have the right to tell, okay?
Yeah.
We have the right.
Yes.
Of course.
Because our rights were taken
from
us.
The other people might not like hearing it. And so that's
mm-hmm.
where we go. And you
mm-hmm.
tell, and I think Bill was saying he told the wrong person. I don't think I've told the wrong person. I don't think a lot of the people have reacted in a way that I think is beneficial for the greatness of everything, but I don't think I held it as my responsibility on the way there. All I did was tell the truth, you know. You don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I don't like it either, but that's life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And at
mm-hmm.
any event, I like the idea of lessening the taboo, speaking. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not afraid of what they said. I was not afraid of the family. I didn't have that fear that they were going to leave me or something. I did it for them because I did do love them, you know. But,
mm-hmm.
yeah, they were really bitching at me last year.
Could I say something?
Mm-hmm. Sure enough. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. See, some people, it's okay when you do confront them, you know, but majority of the time, which is disappointing, you know, of course, when you do go to confront a perpetrator, they deny it ever existed.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes
mm-hmm.
the person feel even that much more worse with them denying it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They never get the apology or anything. And so sometimes you just have to end up almost like I had to disown my family because of it. You know, I had to choose, okay, I deserve to a happy life. I don't deserve the rest of my life putting up with people using and controlling and thinking about destroying me still to the day, you know. So I did away with that for a lot of my life, you know.
Yeah.
It didn't do me much good to confront them, but so every case is different. Every individual is different. So at times
That's
it's
true.
Good when you can't confront. But at least I did confront my stepmom, and I did put it out there for my mom. Even though, you know, it didn't bring us closer or nothing, they knew that I was at the top and knowing that I remembered what they did to me, you know.
Right.
But every person's different, and you got to have that support system behind you if you do choose to tell as well, because it's, you know, you got to have a support system, which I'm glad that there's a support system with NASA, you know, on the Zoom on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays.
I look at it this way: if you confront the abuser, regardless of what he or she says, they're abusers, they're liars, they're not honorable people. So I wouldn't take it. You know, my brother said he was sorry, but he lied. I mean, he wasn't sorry. And of course, now that the opportunity is for him to actually have to face charges. Of course he's going to deny it. My God, he's hiding like if he had a turtle shell, you would never see him. But anyway, that doesn't matter to me. And it doesn't matter to me what happens. It feels good. The time was right to go ahead and blast it. But I was interested in and I hope to hear some more.
All right. Okay, everybody listen to me. Yo, yo, yo. Here, listen to me, okay? We have a full panel here. A lot more people have called in.
I'm going to have to let you go, but I thank you all for letting me talk.
I'm glad
you're talking
to
you another time.
Kathy. Okay. Okay. Bye-bye. We're talking another time. Bye-bye now.
I like hearing you, so I hope I see you, hear from you again, okay?
No, she's gone, honey.
She's gone.
She didn't have much time tonight. She did say that. I have a 203 area code number. I want to open up their mic. And I also have a 305 area code number. I want to open up their mic. Let's see who they are. Okay? Hi, welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is Carol Levine. Who am I speaking to? 203 area code. Okay, let's try the 305. I'm going to open up this mic. Some people just like to listen. They don't like being on air. All right, 305 area code. Who am I speaking to?
This is Ann from Miami.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Pam.
Hi, how are you? I've been listening to this. This is my first time listening to the radio show, by the way.
Well, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
I'm not actually physically able to tell my abuser because he's been dead for years.
Right.
And to me, telling someone isn't just confronting an abuser. It's telling your truth and telling what happened and making it real on the outside instead of keeping it inside. That's how I take about telling. It has nothing to do with confrontation.
Okay. That's a good point. We need to, I feel that we need, you know, to tell. And hopefully, I'm going to say hopefully in families, because families, that's a different thing. In families, I hopefully, you know, the people will help us. But I, in my feeling, and I took the chance. I did it at the age of seven and a half. I did tell on my first abuser. I absolutely did, and that was my uncle. And
wow, that's a great
I didn't know. I was afraid he was going to kill me. Okay, but I had to tell. I couldn't take it anymore. All right, it's just the way it was. And personally, I didn't care if I was dead at that point because I was there a year and a half. I was there a year and a half, and he abused me 176 times. And I kept track of it by putting it on a piece of paper, just by making a mark. And I never threw that paper out. And when I was gone from there, when I finally got up the guts to tell, I counted all those marks, and it was 176 times. So I didn't care, okay, if he killed me at that point, because I was done at the ripe age of seven and a half. Yeah. So it's not an easy thing
listen,
to do. Go
but
ahead.
Listen to what she just said. What Pam's saying is there's many times the opportunity to confront has gone.
Mm-hmm.
In her case, it's gone. In my case, it was gone with two out of three. It's just the way it is. That doesn't mean there's not stuff inside of us that needs repair, needs help, needs to be healed. And that's what the healing journey is about. It's not about getting justice. It's about getting recovery. And it may include getting justice someday, but it's not necessary, which is what I think Pam is saying. You know, she had to heal inside herself when there wasn't even any possibility to get any kind of justice. And a lot of people are like that. So we just can't make blanket statements that we expect everybody to act the same way or be the same way, because there is a broad spectrum of experiences of abuse of different kinds, and there's a broad spectrum of ways to do recovery. But the common denominators, like the keeping of the secret or the feeling of shame or the worrying about being thrown away or the, you know, these are the universal things that in different degrees many, many of us feel. I was sure I was going to, I thought I would go for a long time without ever talking about the facts of my abuse, but what a relief it was when I found a place where I could and where people, now we have NASCA, we didn't back then, but now we have NASCA where people understand and they tell us that's one of the first things we hear. Well, that's not uncommon. It happens all the time. You're in the right place. Keep coming back. Mm-hmm. These are the messages we want the newcomer, no matter what their experience is, to hear resonating, you know, with our show.
Right. I believe that over the years, Bill, I believe over the years that certainly the 11 years that I've been here, one thing that this show does provide, of course, we offer a platform if people want to tell a story, okay. But we also offer a tremendous amount of support. And what people realize is by listening to all the speak, all right, this is a type of show. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have different shows. And then we do on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, where you do tell your story. That's a different show. Those are different shows. But what we do offer here is an awful lot of information just by sharing, okay? I'm a rough person. I was a rough kid. And I felt that, you know, in my case, it was the right thing to do, and I'm not sorry I did it. I'm not sorry I told my mother with my brother, okay? It didn't do any good, but I'm still not sorry, okay? And I just want people to know that we're not pieces of garbage to be kicked around, okay? We're people too. And it takes guts. It takes a long time. Sometimes people don't tell until they're 30 years old. They're not able to. They don't have it within them to tell. They're too frightened, or they're too ashamed, or in my case, I felt so dirty. I wanted to scrub my skin until my skin almost fell off. That's how I felt, because I felt dirty. I, like Kathy, who hung up, she couldn't say, but I'm just going to say, I happen to never feel that it was really my fault. But a lot of kids do feel. Well, a lot of kids
Correct.
Do feel, Bill. You
right.
know, they,
but
you
I
know,
never felt
they
dirty
figure,
either. You know, dirty would never a word that I would use to describe. So we're different is what I'm saying. But a lot of people do, and a lot of people don't. And we're
right.
as inclusive as we want as we can be here at NASCA. So, you know, so no matter what your abuse the background is, you're in. And it doesn't matter what ethnic background, social background, you know, religious background. Mm-hmm. Religion's another one. A lot of us come in, not all of us, again, I have to say a lot, not all, but a lot of us come in, you know, kind of shaking our fist at God. We maybe were brought up with God, but when this stuff happens to us, we shake our fist at God. Now, others have a relationship that's unbroken, and they stay in their church. But so it can happen both ways. But if you do have, you know, if you are shaking your fist at God, that also is not an impediment to getting on a healing journey. So you see, you can come here with different experiences, but that actually will be a similar experience to a huge percentage of us, no matter which way you have it. Belief in God or not belief in God, there's a huge number of us that have experienced both those things. And so there's a lot of help because of that. There's thousands of us here, right? We got every experience.
Well, with the way it is today, I can honestly say this, and then I want to ask William, okay, because we haven't gotten to him.
Okay.
He's been quiet for a while. But today, Bill, okay, look at it today. We do encourage people. We're trying to encourage people, you know, to come forward and to share their stories and to get help, you know, certainly if you haven't gotten help, to do so. Because if we are, you know, going to be people who are going to stay silent, see, silence is a very bad thing with a lot of things. It doesn't have to be child abuse. It can be about a lot of things. Silence gets us nowhere. Many times we have to bring it out. Even if you get, you know, a little beat up along the way, whatever, you know, mentally, physically, whatever, because you're bringing out the truth. And if we don't bring out the truth about child abuse, and if we try to sugarcoat child abuse, and all this other stuff, then we don't move forward. And this is the healing journey, as I named it years ago, the healing journey. And if we're going to progress in our healing journey, then we have to go through rough times on the healing journey to face certain things, maybe certain people, whatever the case might be. I never felt like I had to say to someone, you know, say you're sorry to me for what you did. Apologize, because I knew they wouldn't. In fact, I tried it once with my brother, and he just looked at me and said, "You're lying," just like what we had spoken about earlier. But the truth was still there, so it went nowhere, you see. But we have to, you know, I think to
we don't
move
have
forward.
We don't have to do this. We don't have to do anything. And there's nothing you must do. That's all I'm trying to say. It's recommended. But it's not
yes, it is.
Just starting to make a start. Yeah.
Oh,
William, you're being quiet.
I'm trying to run the show. You be quiet. I've got William here. He's been quiet too long.
I'm trying to be the guest. You don't want me to be the guest.
I'll be quiet. so we can talk to each other this way because we've known each other for so many years. All right, look, William's here, and I want to see what he has to say.
Well,
I
it's very
you.
Interesting. Because really what they're doing, and that a lot of times it doesn't necessarily mean confrontation, but what you're doing in a way when you're telling your story and that is witnessing and telling others and encouraging others. And that's all part of the healing process too, like you said. And that's an important step toward the healing process is overcoming that fear, that shame. And other things that's affected your life from the abuse, That's all part
That's
of
right.
it. And Bill knows that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because we're from similar backgrounds,
serious,
so we've seen a lot of it.
A lot of it, you know. But I was serious, Carol, in saying I would substitute for Michelle and talk about my ministry, if you wish. I was serious, and if you don't want to, that's fine. But I'm really interested in the first topic. You know, this show is topic-driven. The first topic
mm-hmm.
was the growth that we've seen in NASCA and many individuals within NASCA. That was a great topic. Then the topic became eventually the characteristics of that a newcomer presents when they come into NASCA, or that they might be listening with and they're considering coming into NASCA. And yes,
mm-hmm.
a lot of
mm-hmm.
our messages deals with them. We don't have a problem not having loud voices. We have plenty of loud voices around here, and that's good. that's part of the healing, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
because if we're too quiet, then nothing gets out. Yeah.
Right. That's one of the common things that newcomers have inside of them, the fear of talking at all because of the various things we've talked about. Because here, you don't have to tell your whole story, but just introducing yourself goes a long way to making a start. That's it. Just coming on, just saying hi. I've never called in before like Pam did, but I've listened for a while. I'm so glad Pam is here. So
well, thank you.
Yeah.
What's that noise? What's that scraping noise?
It's a dog.
Well, you probably hear the dog.
A dog
with Alabama, you know, helping. A dog's barking in the background. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
So if he saw horses on the TV or anything like that or another animal, he starts barking at them.
Boy, he barks with a southern
accent,
anyway, too. That's amazing.
He probably does.
He does.
Yeah. One thing that I was noticing, and one thing that really burns me up, is
mm-hmm.
like when you start telling a few people, like you know you're telling your story, and you want to get out there, and you do go ahead and people know that you get your story out there and all. You come across a couple of nitwits, as I would call it, they don't need to be called nitwits. Let's just say uninformed. People
right.
that would say something like, oh, if this happened to me, I would have left that family and I would have done this and I would have done that. I would have got a shotgun. And I was thinking, how do you know what you would have done if you lived with it from birth and you were conditioned? You cannot say
mm-hmm.
what you would have done if you did not live in that person's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you may not know the circumstances.
What starts me up is how people, it's got no clue. If that was me, I would have done this. You should have got out of it. You should have done this. You should have done that. Excuse me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we did the best we could to just survive it.
No, that's true. That's true. You have a point there.
Very true. Very true.
I remember survival mode, and it was not didn't feel good because we were always worried as children if we were going to get hit or if we were going to get thrown out. I got thrown out so many times
uh-huh.
in my house, I can't even tell you. All kinds of stuff. I mean, we were surviving just to live to survive, okay? To survive, to live, whichever way you
exactly.
want to look at it. Yeah, and that was a chore in itself. It was really big, okay, and hard to do at times, you bet. Pam, what do you feel about this? Are you there?
Oh, it's Ann, not Pam.
Pam
from
Miami.
Yeah, I have Pam from Florida here.
It is a survival mode. Unfortunately, I've lived it all my life because I only remembered all this about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm dealing with having the memories confront me. And then I've told a few people that I found out that weren't safe, family members that I thought would support, just wanted me to get over it and don't talk about it again. But then I've been surprised by others that I've connected with that have been more than supporting. They check in on me. I check in on them because they've been through similar things. So it's different every time you state your truth. But stating your truth is as important as the reaction you get. It's not to expect a reaction. It's to expect someone to hear what happened to you. What they do with it is their issue.
Well, you know, that's true. And everyone has to handle things the way that they see fit. And with me, I just, you know, I've always been an aggressive type of person, except for a very short period of time in my life. I became inward, okay? So I went from one extreme to the other extreme in my behavior. And I felt that if I was going to survive the type of life that I was living, that I had to become very aggressive. I had to fight back one way or another.
Yeah,
I had to fight back. And, you know, even in school, I had to fight back because I was never dressed properly. I wasn't bathed properly, all this other stuff. So I had to become like the bully that you know, Bill talks about. They were bullying me, but I had to learn how to bully back. And I actually made them scared of me. I actually made a couple of teachers scared of me. That's how bad I got. But that's okay, because that was like my survival mode, okay, was to be tough and rough.
I have very introverted. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Go ahead.
Very introverted, and some are very outspoken. And sometimes I don't know which one's going to come out.
That's all right. That's
no,
you.
Don't.
Know.
But the thing that Pam's talking about, Carol, you know, it starts in childhood, certainly, but it continues into adulthood, and it manifests in various ways. Like a person that might be an introvert can also have flashes of anger all the time and not know where that comes from. But it's part of their behavior, and it's because they're still injured. They don't know different, you know. Maybe now as an adult we're able to have anger where we were not capable because we weren't permitted as children to express any of our feelings. And men don't even know what feelings are. Most of us, all we have is fear and anger pretty much at first. And then we start to have labels for feelings. So the thing is that whatever you experienced in your childhood, it doesn't go away just because you turn 18. It manifests into characteristics and tendencies and actions and a thinking process that goes well into your adulthood, even if you don't remember the particulars of your abuse. You still carry it with you, and then at some point it might be triggered and jump out at you. Maybe that's what happened to Sam 5 years ago. I don't know. But it's shocking.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? And there's people here that identify with that, too. You know? But there's also folks, myself, I remembered everything very clearly. I didn't have any problem. That was part of the problem, is I remembered everything. I hated myself. I hated what I had gone through. So it can run the gamut, but it's the damage that happened in our childhood, which we refer to as trauma, that shows up in our adult life. That's what we have to recover from. We'll never get to fix the childhood. But we can fix today. We can fix today.
Right.
So you won't hear people telling you to go away. You won't hear people, like Pam said, say, oh, it happened so long ago, forget about it. Oh, no, not here, never.
Mm-mm.
You'll hear just the opposite. That's so important that you brought that up. A lot of us feel in the same way. So glad you shared. That's what you'll hear. It's a very different message than you'll hear, you know, in other groups or not another group, but certainly before recovery. So this is the joy that you eventually end up with, that you're a member of a huge percentage of the population. We think, Carol, that somewhere 30%, it's a third, right, of all children were abused. That's a huge percentage. And talk about a pandemic. That pandemic has been going on forever. And we still live in it. So obviously we try to do whatever we can to help today's children. But right now, in the meantime, the best way to help today's children is to be on a path of recovery ourselves and learn as much as we can about the issues of child abuse. So
that's right.
You know, I hope people hear that message more than anything else here at NASCA. You are welcome. You're in the right. We will never tell you to go away. What you have to share is valid and important. And how you feel is valid. How you feel is valid. And you are free to share it here on our show.
Right.
Thank you.
Well, that couldn't be more true.
Yeah.
Now that couldn't be more true. Go ahead.
Hey, Pam. Welcome.
Go ahead.
Welcome to the show and everything. Well, my story too. A lot I did know about, but a lot I still don't know about. And I'm 57 years old, but a lot that I did remember was in my 30s later on. You know, when some other things happened, and a doctor examined me and told me about seeing a lot of damage and wondered if I was sexually abused and stuff, and I said, yeah, that's all past. I try to sweep it behind me, you know. I try to say, mm-hmm. that a long time ago, I dealt with it. And he said the magnitude that he had seen, he had never seen nobody as messed up internally as he saw me. And I'm like, but it's fine. It's okay. Just sweep the ass. I'm not worried about it, you know. And then all of a sudden that started, I guess that opened up Pandora's box.
Yeah.
The memory started
yeah.
and that.
That's right. That's exactly right. Now I have something here I just want to read real quick, okay, and because it fits right in with what we're speaking about, from childhood into adulthood, and this is so true, but we do heal if we get the right help, all right? And this is by George A. Boyd, which I follow. I read many books by him. It's when you grow up in a dysfunctional family, you experience trauma and pain from your parents' actions, words, and attitudes. Because of this trauma you experienced, you grew up changed, different from other children, missing important parts of necessary parenting that prepare you for adulthood, missing parts of your childhood when you were forced into unnatural roles within your family. For some of you, it has led you to attempt to flee from the pain of your past by alcohol or drug abuse or all different other types of things. Others of you feel inexplicably compelled to repeat the abuses that were done to you on your own children or with your own spouses. Others of you have felt inner anxiety or rage and don't know why you feel as you do. You were innocent. Your life was changed dramatically by forces in your family you had no control over, and now you are an adult survivor of that trauma. That is so, so true. And that's what we're talking about here tonight, too, is the very fact of what we go through as children. If we don't get the help that we need, if we don't get that hope, if someone doesn't say, hey, it wasn't your fault, if we don't have those things in our life, then we do carry it over into an adulthood, and we have that inner rage, that rage that dominates many times our lives, and we take it out if we get married, if we have other significant others, or whatever the case must be. We take it many times out on them. You see, this is what happens. And until we realize where that's coming from, the core issue that I keep going back to, the core issue, then there's not going to be any growth or change, or it might be change, but it might be really negative change. So, you know, when people listen to this show, many times they hear about themselves and they can think back and they can say, hey, that's where that came from. Hey, now I understand. Now I understand why I feel the way that I do. Okay. So, you know, people out there, for God's sake, it wasn't your fault. Go get help. If you were abused, that could be physically, sexually, emotionally. It could be from neglect. All the abuses that we speak about on this show, you're not alone. And we do know that 1 in 4 girls are sexually abused by the time they're 18. And between 1 in 5 or 6 boys are sexually abused by the time they're 18. Now, when you've gone through that abuse, you're going to do things that aren't normal, okay? You're going to have problems. And you're going to feel bad about yourself, maybe. It can be, there's just so many things that can cause you pain. And that's why so often we do try to escape into the alcohol and the drugs, okay? It's that's what happens. I certainly did. Bill did. I don't know if William did or not, but I do know that there's a lot of people who turn to alcohol and drugs, but that's only a tiny list of the things, of things that we do against ourselves, and we've already been damaged.
Yeah, you know what I like?
My phone.
Yeah, there's a little feedback coming in. You know what I like about what you just read? The word unwittingly. The word unwittingly, which means that without realizing what we're doing, okay, that's what unwittingly means. So what it's saying is the behavior that we manifest in adulthood being a result of childhood trauma, we unwittingly do to others. We do a lot of damage to ourselves, yes, but also to the world around us. I mean, we're like, some of us are like, a tempest in a teapot, right? We are the bowl in the china shop kind of thing. Or we're completely introverted. It can be either extreme, but we're not normal. And he also says, and somebody mentioned before, we're mentally different than the other 75%. If it's 25%, 30%, or 35% of the population that's damaged, we are different than the remaining 65%. But there's 35% of us. So we get it. There's a huge group of people who do understand because we come from the same place. And NASCA is full of those people. That's all we have here. Almost all we have here are survivors in some place in their recovery. So you'll fit right in, is my message. You'll fit right in. You will be welcome to what we call the NASCA family. And you'll never not have, from this point forward, a place to come, a place to be welcomed, and a place to find more information about your healing journey. I mean, that's what I hope heard as a gift. It costs a newcomer nothing to do. Everything we do at NASCA is free, right? So it costs you nothing, and yet it might save the quality of your life. Certainly will change. It might dramatically. It did in my case, save my life, change my life. And I hope we're offering that to us. We are, and we offer that to the lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you, Bill. We've had people change right before our eyes, if you will. Okay, we're on the phone, but you get to know people, and they have changed, most of them for the better. And then there are those people out there that realize, okay, I have to find the right therapist. Because we tell you to find the right therapist. If you go to a regular therapist, someone who doesn't understand child abuse, that's going to be a problem. They're probably not going to help you as much as you need. And let me say something, because someone asked me this just a couple days ago about therapy. Therapy is not always comfortable, okay? If you have a really good therapist, it shouldn't always be comfortable. We have to many times look back at ourselves, you know, and the situations from which we came in order to understand how we're going to move forward. Yes, it was never our fault. However, there are some things that we did do. We knew we were doing wrong. I certainly can put myself there, and I can take accountability for it and say, hey, that wasn't the right way to handle this. I could have handled it differently. And that's growth, okay? You're able to look at yourself. Because we're always trying so hard to put up that wall. I mentioned this the other day, so that we don't get hurt, you know. So we don't want to look at ourselves in a bad way because we've already been told that we're this, we're that, we're this, we're that, and this or that, or we're not this or that, whatever the case might be. So we're able to put down that wall. And I like using that, Bill, because we used that years ago, and I like that because people can see it. It's almost putting a visual in front. If you take the wall down, you see more. If you put the wall up, you're closed in and you're not able to grow. So,
you know,
it's okay.
You know, using that in that metaphor, I used to say more than I do today, but it's still true. You take the wall down, let's say it's a brick wall, you take the bricks out one at a time in recovery.
Right.
And then what you start to do is you start to build a bridge, just your side of the bridge towards somebody else. And that other person has their own wall, and they're taking down one brick at a time, their own bridge, their own wall. But they're also building their own side of that bridge. And these two bridges can meet each other in an astonishing way. Like Carol and I love each other deeply. It sounds like we fight a lot, but we don't. We adore each other. And that's never going to change. She's kind of stuck with me, you know, at this point. our bridge was completed years ago, and it doesn't take that long. You just have to think of it that way, because that's what we're here for, is to find each other and to help each other and to, you know, get across the River Styx, right, the river, by building a bridge, taking down our walls and building bridges towards each other. That's the metaphor in its completeness for me. Yeah.
Right. And it's that way for myself also. I think that if you give people something to look at, you know, and they can see that wall going up or coming down, they can identify with it and they can think about it and maybe help themselves to bring, you know, to trust themselves enough and to trust, maybe try to put some trust out there, you know, with other people, you know, to bring that wall down a little bit more, you know. And it's a good feeling once we reach the point where we're able to bring that wall down and say, okay, here I am, and I'm ready to move forward. I'm ready to look forward. I'm ready to make goals for myself, okay? And I'm not that piece of garbage that I was told when I was a kid, and it wasn't my fault. Mm-mm. No. Well, let's see. That was all interesting, I think. William, what do you think about that? He's still eating. I don't know what he's doing. He already muted himself. William, are you there?
Yeah, I had to unmute my mic. And my mic muted.
That's fine. Well, what do you think about that with the wall and how we grow and how we're able to move forward if we have the right, you know, things to work with, the right skills?
Well, that's part of developing all that, to overcome all that.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill's right. You know, you can't jump over everything all at once. You have to gradually process and build to overcome this stuff and where you're going with your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a process. That isn't going to happen overnight, because it takes time and courage, and you have to deal with a lot of issues that you dealt with in child abuse and things, and maybe even drug addiction or other addictions and things that were involved in it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And not to mention depression, self-esteem, and other things that played a role in putting you in those situations.
Do you realize what you just said there? Depression, do you realize that there are 2,328 people a day, okay, who kill themselves because of depression?
Yeah. Right. And there's a lot of, like,
William, doesn't it?
That's awful.
It is. It's horrible.
I mean, that's just horrifying. And, I came across that someplace where I was reading. I don't
All
know.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I see.
Well, it's a terrible thing. You see, like you said, depression is part of it. We fall into slumps of depression. We, as we move on in our healing journey, okay, we deal with things more effectively, and we're, things that bothered us, say, 5 years ago don't bother us nearly as much today because we've grown, okay? In 5 years' time, you can significantly, you know, you can grow. And so with the depressive state, but that's a topic all on its own, though, William, because those that are truly depressed need help for the depression. Yeah, you bet. I tried to commit suicide when I was 17, and I got caught and pulled by the back of my long blonde hair. It was long and blonde then, and yanked out of the house and got me out of there. But, you know, the point is that so many people suffer from, you know, suicidal ideations. I did for many years. It took me a long time to get over that because I suffered so from panic as well. Panic disorder. Excuse me. There is a difference between panic attacks and panic disorder. Panic disorder takes over your life. It can. And it can go into agoraphobia, where you don't want to leave your house. But because I like to shop, I'm a shopaholic. I couldn't deal with it. I know, honey.
Yeah.
I'm leaving. Go ahead.
I had agoraphobia, so I had agoraphobia real bad. And one way that I still have bouts of it at times. And so, like, whenever Bill comes to the house or so, he will make sure that I kind of force me out of that house because he knows that if I stay in the house too long, even because of this quarantine type of stuff, he would still have me in that car and going around somewhere to try to get it where that it don't come back in full force, you know?
That's a good point, you know, Darlene, because I'm talking to someone right now, okay? And not right this second, but I mean someone right now. I get a lot of phone calls. And this person will, you know, doesn't want to come out of their house, okay? This is common. Unfortunately, it's common. And I say, just sit on the front porch if you can. And while I was speaking to the person, that person then went down the stairs and went out the front porch, and that person sat on the porch. And she said, well, this isn't much growth. And I said, now, wait a minute now. Before, you weren't even going to go down the stairs and sit on the porch. What do you see around you? She says, oh, I see houses and I see cars, I see people. And how do you feel? And then you go into all of that. Well, she could only stay there for about 4 or 5 minutes and she had to go back upstairs because she was starting to feel panicky, okay? That's okay. The point is she did it. And if you do that every day and make the steps a little bit more, go down the street a little bit, even if it's a block or even half a block, then you have to, this is what I had to do. You know, this is what you do. And before you know it, then you're able to get into your car and go out and go someplace and be a part of society. It doesn't happen overnight, like William said. This is, it's all something that you have to work up to and do. If you want to heal, you know, we all want to heal, you know, but it's a healing process. It's a healing journey. Yeah.
She
we
could,
only have 2 minutes
call me
left.
If she ever needed it. She could call me if she ever needed it because, you know, because I still go through bouts of that. So maybe I could encourage her sometime if she needed somebody to talk to, you know.
Sure. Absolutely.
So
that's what we're here for.
Yep. So
you know,
woman who likes to feel free, you know, since I am my number's on the and what part is that under
the contact list. Are you on the contact list?
Yes, I'm on the contact list. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yes, she is.
Good.
So
there's a lot of people suffer from
Mark.
Can I have, again, I was trying to be the minister tonight and I didn't get to do it, but can I have 30 seconds to say something about it?
Yeah, sure, can.
And that is,
go ahead.
The show is about Dan. For those who don't know, the person that's speaking right now is Bill Murray, and I'm the founder of NASCA, okay? I was fully 25 years into recovery before I started NASCA, and now it's 12 years later. I did not know that it would end up where it is, but I hoped it would, frankly. I didn't know it would have all the tools and everything, but I hoped it would. But, you know, my original occupation that I was interested in was priesthood. And, you know, God had for me a different idea. And it ended up that my ministry, after 25 years of recovery, and I had a lot of experience when I posted the website the first day I posted it. Didn't know what it was going to be, and this is what it's become. That's my ministry. That's my ministry.
Yep.
I do believe in God.
Absolutely.
God the Father, God Jesus Christ, and more importantly, God the Holy Spirit, because it's the Holy Spirit that you know, Jesus, if you believe in Christianity, left behind. The Spirit lives with us. And I believe it's accessible to all of us if we simply turn to it and ask for the Holy Spirit to descend on us. You know, it's there.
Absolutely.
That's who most closely resembles Carol, my higher power. You know, the sort of the Holy Spirit. So thanks for letting me have that. Yep.
Oh, that's no problem, Bill. And it doesn't matter what faith you are or even if you are an atheist. With me, I'm very much a Christian, and I do believe that if it was not for God and Jesus, I would be dead. It's as simple as that.
Okay.
But everyone believes the way that they do, okay? And that's fine.
Sure.
The point is that there is hope, and to keep listening to the show. We are here for you. We do have the contact list, and I have someone just tell me we have about 8 seconds now left for the show. So I'm going to have to wrap this up. We had a very interesting show tonight. I'm glad we all have big mouths, especially, you know, I have a big mouth, I admit it. I love to talk, I love to speak, but I also love to try and help. And that's why we do speak as we do. And so on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have shows similar to this. And on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays, people come on and they tell their story. So we'll be here tomorrow night, and I will be hosting tomorrow night. Okay, so I just want to say God bless to all of you. For God's sake, stay safe, all right? And thank you for being on the show. Good night now.
God bless.
God bless. Good night.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that's gone with
Blog Talk Radio.